Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So the Vedas have a plan for gradually uplifting the ignorant souls to make them first interested in varieties of material success in this life. And then they become a little more intelligent and aspire for something better, success in the future life, like attainment of heaven. But by performing the rituals that will allow them to go to heaven, they become even more purified in their consciousness, and they can maybe realize that the best success you can achieve in the material world is still limited and temporary. So the next level that the Vedas encourage their followers to rise to is the aspiration for liberation. Okay, and then there's a higher level than that. Or that aspiration for liberation manifests on different levels. So now we're on 97.11. Tatascha tata buddhyadayo antar mukata tara tamyena chitshakti avyabhavat pare tatve. Oh no, that's okay. Don't bother. No, sit down and listen to the plans.
It's too hot.
It's okay, it's not that bad. Tara tamyena charanti. And then, as the spiritual potency manifests, according to the degree of inward focus of the intelligence and so on, these faculties gain access to the absolute truth in a hierarchy of increasing degrees. So this is what results, after all, of these gradual steps of elevation. As one's intelligence focuses inward, turns away from the external, one starts to gain some spiritual intelligence, some spiritual potency, knowledge and renunciation. And this spiritual potency of spiritual knowledge and renunciation help one begin to understand on different levels, different degrees, the absolute truth. So, taratamya, you know this word? Well, it's a hierarchy, it's what we call a hierarchy. It's a chain of superior, inferior and superior. Everyone's on this chain. Only God is at the top of it. Everyone else is at the middle. And there's somebody at the very bottom of the chain of existence. That's a hierarchy. Or any structure of an organization is a hierarchy. That's taratamya. Tara and tama, better and best. So it's a ranking of better and better, better and better than better. Taratamya. According to the antar mukata taratamyena, according to the degree of one's turning inward or becoming faithful, there's a corresponding degree of the Vedas describing the absolute truth. Vedas can describe the absolute truth, but the message only gets across to somebody who's got some spiritual potency. Chitshakti avirbhava, to the degree that the spiritual potency manifests because of increasing faith, to that degree the Vedas can describe the absolute truth. In fact, let me see, I think I may have the wrong subject in the verb, as in the sentence as I translated. Let me look again. Charanti is the verb. Yeah, it's okay. Although in Parikshit's question, Charanti was used in reference to the Vedas, describing or having access to the absolute truth. How do they walk around in the absolute truth, literally? But in this sentence of Jiva Goswami, the subject is buddhi-adayo, the intelligence and other faculties of the individual soul. They have access to the absolute truth. And he uses the same verb, charanti. Okay? So, translation is correct. Continuing. Tata shruti lakshanam vachanam api chitshakti prakash anukramena trigunya vishayatram atikramya kevala nirgunya vishayam eva sat tasmin nirgune tatve samyag eva charitam shaknoti aguna vrititvena yogyatvat. Shruti lakshanam vachanam api. What does that mean? Now I'm trying to push you to understand the Sanskrit. Shruti lakshanam vachanam api.
The meaning of the shruti.
Well, what does vachanam mean? Okay, I see. Okay, I got it. Yeah. Shruti lakshanam vachanam. What does that mean, that phrase? What did you say? You said quality? Well, characteristic. Okay, the noise is going to start now and continue for about 5 days, or almost a week. We're going to have to tolerate it. I don't. Yeah. They managed to turn off the electricity around the town, and they're using some generator to run their noise. We're sort of powerless against it. Well, okay. Well, okay. Okay, can we sit down and listen? Shruti lakshanam vachanam. Lakshanam doesn't mean meaning. Okay, so it can't be said. Lakshanam, as Sarvagya said, means characteristic. But it can also sometimes be translated as definition. You know, that's how you define something, by stating it's characteristic. The word lakshanam can mean both. But we have a phrase here, shruti lakshanam vachanam. It's not the lakshanam and the vachanam of shruti, but it's the vachanam of shruti, which is its lakshanam. Shruti lakshanam is a bhavri compound. It describes the vachanam. Vachanam is the words of the Vedas, which are characteristic of the Vedas, or by which the Vedas are defined in the terms of their words. Just like in the initial question of Parikshit, his objection was based on the fact that the shrutis consist of words,
And words just describe things with qualities. So that is the characteristic of Shruti. It's made out of words. The particular kind of words that is the Vedas. They are capable, well, Vachanam is singular, so the verb is singular, shaknoti. Charitam shaknoti. So first of all, it says that the intelligence of a purified person who's been lifted up through these different levels by following the Vedas, his intelligence can access the absolute truth. His intelligence and other faculties. Intelligence, mind, senses. He can see the deity, and he sees a deity, not just a statue. That means his physical senses can access the absolute truth. So that's the first qualification. The person, the recipient of this knowledge, has to become fit, qualified. Then the Vedas are capable of giving him access to the absolute truth. When the person who's reading the Vedas becomes purified and his faculties become spiritually surcharged. Okay, so I read the translation of the second part of the sentence. Correspondingly, to the degree that the spiritual potency has become manifest in someone, the language of the Shruti also transcends its having the products of the three modes as its subject matter. Okay, could you unplug me? Don't plug me in. I'll read it again because it's important. Correspondingly, to the degree that the spiritual potency has become manifested in someone, the language of the Shruti also transcends its having the products of the three modes as its subject matter. It assumes as its subject the pure reality beyond the modes and becomes able to properly access that transcendental reality, becoming fit by focusing on transcendence. So when is it? Question is, when is it that the Vedas can describe the absolute truth? When there's someone who's capable of understanding that description. When the person who's listening to the Vedas is materialistic, the Vedas can only talk materialism to that person. And when the person is an impersonalist, the Vedas can also only teach impersonal realization. When someone has a seed of devotion planted, then the Vedas can start talking the real truth. Okay, and this is corroborated from the Bhagavatam. Taduktam dwadashe pranavam upalakshya. This is described in the 12th canto with reference to the syllable Om. Okay. Back to Om. But this is not some Mayavadi book or Upanishad talking about Om. This is Bhagavatam, 12th canto talking about Om. Tato bud trivid omkaro yovyakta prabhavat swarat yad talingam bhagavato brahmanat paramat manaha. Translation of that, I can find it. From that transcendental subtle vibration arose the Omkar. First there's the subtle sound that doesn't even, it's not even perceived as any word or syllable, the Tara. But that manifests the Omkar. The Omkar is composed of three sounds. The Omkar has unseen potencies, and it manifests automatically within a purified heart. Okay, so again, when there's a purified heart, then the Om can manifest itself. It is, of course, anybody can hear Om, but nobody can, people, just like anybody can look at the deity, but to see that it's the deity, you have to have spiritual vision. To recognize Om for what it is, you have to have a purified heart. It, Om, is the representation of the absolute truth in all three of his phases, the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Soul, and the Supreme Impersonal Truth. So here we're talking about Om in the 12th canto, and it's described as the representation or the expression of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Okay, continuing. Iti, tatra, tatvam, dvidha, spurati. Specifically, there are two ways in which the reality appears. Two ways. Bhagavad rupena, Brahma rupena, cheti. As Bhagavan and as Brahman. Chit shaktir api dvidha, tadiya svayam prakashari maya bhakti rupena, tanmaya jnana rupena cha. The spiritual potency. That means the spiritual potency in an individual, sadhaka. The spiritual potency that appears in someone who's following the Vedas. Not just a spiritual potency out there in the Brahma Jyoti, but the person's individual potency, spiritual potency. The spiritual potency is also twofold. As bhakti, which shares his self-luminosity and other qualities, and as jnana concerning him. Self-luminosity is a quality of the Supreme. What does self-luminosity mean? What does illuminated mean? Well, what is, without the self, what does this plain illuminate mean? Well, okay, it means made visible. Or maybe we're talking about something, maybe a more general term is made perceivable by some faculty. You know, we're not, it really should be extended beyond just vision, but it can be perceived, it can be understood. That's to be illuminated. Like you can say someone illumines the topic. It doesn't mean he comes with a flashlight, it means he explains it. He makes it understandable. So the absolute truth is self-luminous. As you said, it doesn't need anything else to shine a light on it. It shines its own light. He explains himself. He makes himself knowable, and he knows himself also. Another extension of the phrase is swasmai swayam prakasha. He's self-luminous to himself. It's like, I see the light, but the light doesn't see itself because it has no consciousness. But the living entity is seen, and also he sees himself. And that's a quality of the Supreme. You may say, well, we can explain Brahman as self-luminous, but that's a quality. If you want to be strict about it and not allow Brahman to have any qualities, you can't say that he's self-luminous. That gives him a quality already. So that's actually a quality that's perceived in bhakti, among his many other qualities. And then there's jnana about him. These are two different varieties of the spiritual potency that a person may be empowered with. To understand the absolute truth or to be devoted to the absolute truth and know him as a person. It's by having some spiritual potency given to you that you can understand the absolute truth. The absolute truth can be understood in these two ways, personal and impersonal. And the potency that you're given can be understood as personal or impersonal. Tato bhakti maya shrutayo bhagavati charanti. Gyanamaya shrutayo brahmaniti samanyatat sintantitam. Okay, thus the general conclusion is drawn that the devotional shrutis refer to the personality of Godhead, and the Jnana Shrutis refer to Brahman. Okay. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just want to ask one question.
Before you do, let me explain one thing. This is saying that there are two different kinds of Shrutis. There are actually different books within the Shruti. There are Jnana Shrutis and Bhakti Shrutis. That's a little different than what was said earlier in the paragraph, that the Shruti in general reveals the absolute truth in different ways according to different qualifications of the hearer. That's not contradictory. The Shrutis present the particular parts of themselves to the appropriate candidates. Okay, go ahead with the question. Although we haven't read the commentary yet, but go ahead.
In this translation of Bhakti, Tadiya Swayam Prakashadi Maya Bhakti Rupena, the translation is Bhakti reveals his self-luminosity or something. And
other qualities. This is a sample of his qualities.
But Tanmaya Jnana Rupena Cha is only translated as concerning him, but how that came?
Well, no, the only thing it said, Tanmaya, it's about him. Uh-huh. So what the Jnana is not said here. We're supposed to pick that information up elsewhere. What's Bhakti, what's Jnana? Well, that's explained elsewhere.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mentioned there are two ways in which reality appears, as Bhagavan and as Brahman.
Two ways.
Earlier we said that the reality has three faces, and now only the knowledge.
Well, that's just a simplification. Paramatma is somewhere in the middle. Paramatma is half Bhagavan. But you want to make a simpler categorization, personal, impersonal.
So the Shrutis also give information about Paramatma, right? Even though we say only two aspects here it says reality is Bhagavan and Brahman. That is what is revealed by the Shrutis.
Yes.
You said two categories. But it doesn't mean that the reality of Paramatma is not explained in the Shruti. It
no,
is indeed explained.
No. We can just take Paramatma as a subcategory of Bhagavan.
Okay.
It's Vishnu. It's a person. Okay, let me read the commentary now. The Vedas do not change, but they also show many different facets of their revelation. They offer various kinds of guidance for materialists and aspirants for elevation to higher worlds and for liberation. As an individual progresses spiritually, the Vedas show themselves in more and more sublime light. The absolute truth, conceived of as Bhagavan, as Brahman in Bhagavan, is called in both cases nirguna, without qualities. As Brahman, because it hides its qualities, and as Bhagavan, because he has no material qualities. So both Brahman and Bhagavan can be called nirguna. Not because either one of them doesn't have any qualities, but Brahman hides them, and Bhagavan only shows spiritual qualities. They both play tricks, even though they both have qualities. Nonetheless, any real prakasha or visible appearance of the Supreme's transcendental potencies must be a display of real qualities. He's nirguna. That doesn't mean that when you see qualities, that's an illusion. The first seed of language in the form of the syllable Om contains within itself all names and other words. These combine into statements, first as the Vedas, and subsequently evolve into all kinds of verbal communication. Om is recognized in the Upanishads as revealing the transcendental reality. As the verse cited here from the Bhagavatam explains, Lingam Bhagavato Brahmanat Paramatmanaha. It is the representation of Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma. Readers of the Upanishads with insufficient insight tend to view Om as a name of impersonal Brahman only. But it is ultimately a name of the personality of Godhead. Oh, the Rig Veda tells us that. Om ityetad, well, this Brahmano nedishtam nama. It's the highest name of, it says Brahmano. But we understand it's actually a name of Bhagavan. Well, he says, I am Om, but that's, he's listing Om among his vibhutis. He also says, I'm the shark. Comparing, therefore, the two spiritual practices of jnana and bhakti, the first, cultivation of theoretical knowledge, only refers from a distance to the absolute. Jnana only refers from a distance to the absolute, mostly impersonally. But the other practice, devotional service, comes much closer to the object of devotion, giving its performer fully satisfying personal contact with him. Okay, we now move on into the beginning of the actual discussion of the actual prayers offered. Not yet, I'm sorry. There's, first of all, introduction of an old history by Shukadeva in answering Parikshit's question. So we get into the history next. Any questions? Sorry, I think it was first.
I have two questions. First about Om, first manifested from the subtle sound. But we know that it's already a representation of Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma, so it's already, like his nature is more subtle. So how can be something more subtle than Om in the beginning?
Well, there's the Om, there's the original unmanifest sound, just like material nature is first there as the pradana. And then when she's agitated by Mahavishnu, she manifests the modes. The modes are there in Pradhan, but not manifest. They're totally in complete balance, and therefore nothing happens. Pradhan is inert. Like that, there's an original inert form of the Vedic sound. It's called Tara. Yes, the Supreme Bhagavan is there with all his qualities in that spiritual sound, but totally unmanifest. So subtle means unmanifest. Therefore, the first real manifestation is Om. It's the seed of the Vedic sound. A seed is made out of organic chemicals. Protoplasm is in a seed. And that protoplasm and, you know, other organic chemicals are derived from the parent plant. But the actual seed is a beginning, considered the beginning point of the life. You know, they have a phenomenon in plant life. From the seed comes the plant, and from the plant comes more seeds. Where does the life begin and where does it end? It's a sort of puzzle. Same thing. The seed is the origin, but there's something before the seed. Like the plant comes from the plant, seed comes from the plant. So the seed of the Vedic sound comes from a more unmanifest form of that sound, the basic, the raw ingredients of it.
So, and then question arises, is there any source of this transcendental, like primal transcendental sound?
Yeah, that's described in that same passage of the 12th canto. That Tara is produced by some sort of friction created by the glance of Mahavishnu. You know, it's there, described in the 12th canto, in that, you know, before this verse. You have to look at the previous verses. The Tara is produced, but it comes first, and then from it comes Om. Tara can be perceived by yogis. When they practice complete silence, they can hear it in their heads.
Is it like in Mandukya Upanishad, there is a description of different levels of Om, like five, when we notice different levels of sound, Madhyama, and then so on, like Prakrita, Prakrita manifested, and then fifth level is more subtle.
Yeah, those five levels are described by Shankaracharya in one of his books. And yes, that first, when you split it up into five levels of the manifestation of Om, the first one is the Tara, is the unmanifest version. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's non-different from Om. It's actually, you can say the very first of the five levels of manifesting Om.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Also, I have a question about bhakti being self-luminous. We can understand how Krishna can be self-luminous, but what about bhakti? What does it mean that it's...
self-luminous?
Yes, luminous.
Bhakti what bhaktiya sanjataya bhaktiya. The only thing that can create bhakti is bhakti. Bhakti is not created by good works. It's not created by knowledge. It's not even created by the Supreme Lord, because he chooses not to interfere. He doesn't give us bhakti by his choice, because if he did, he'd be interfering with our independence. So bhakti is a free agent. She chooses when to descend on somebody. So in that sense, she's self-manifest. Even Krishna doesn't make her manifest. He doesn't throw the switch to make bhakti flow. Bhakti is independent in that way, or at least autonomous.
Is this like same as Śrīla Prabhupāda in one of the purport of first canto, Narada Muni story? He says that bhakti is completely independent as Krishna is. In the same way, we might practice devotional service, but not get realization, because
yes,
it's up to bhakti, up to...
Yeah. Bhakti is a manifestation of Krishna's consort. So she's his female counterpart. She's also independent. But functionally, she's independent, because that's the way bhakti works. Krishna doesn't interfere. He doesn't force bhakti on anybody. Bhakti chooses who to grace. Okay. Yes, Vinit Prabhu.
Prabhu, looking at the Roman transliteration of Om, it appears that it is the vowel O with Anuswar. Or is it any other sound?
You're asking, is it Anuswara or an M?
Yeah.
That's a sort of quirk in the BBT editing. We used to always put a dot on it. Then I started taking the dot off because I didn't see any real reason for it. Yeah, even though it's depicted by that special character, it's got a letter of its own in the alphabet. But there's no rule that it's an anuswara and not an M. Actually, when it's analyzed as three phonemes combined, A, U, and Ma. It's M, not anuswara.
Okay. But how can there be, when A and U come together, they become O?
Well, I don't know, but by Sandhi combination. This is sort of a different chemistry. Yeah.
Okay.
Because A and O become O. A and U become O, not O. Oh, become. But some people write it as Aum.
Yeah, some say it Aum like
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it is a kind of Sandhi combination, but we usually pronounce it as Aum.
Okay, thank you.
There is some good sutra of Aum.
Yes.
What from where?
Oh.
There is a sutra of Aum.
What does it say about Aum?
I'm starting the
somebody asked the question that.
I'm sorry. What about the what about that sutra?
Are
you looking
operating.
For it? Okay.
If somebody asked a question that Om is a seed and all the Nama Rupa, as you mentioned, translation came from that. Is it Krishna and Rama, these are personal names of Krishna, came from Om seed like that? Or?
Well, only in the same way. That's manifestation into the material world.
Okay.
They exist in the spiritual world without coming from Om. They're, you know, they're not expansions of Om. Some people think so. You go to the, what is that, Pagal Baba temple in Vrindavan, 9 stories, and they got different Krishna, you know, manifestations. Krishna with Mother Yashoda at one level, Krishna with Rukmini at another, and the top floor, 9th floor, is just Om. You know, that's the real Krishna. So some people think that Krishna's expansion of Om. But no, that's not the fact. It's just like the way that all the incarnations appear in the world through Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. Like he's the you know, the customs officer. He stamps all the passports of the avatars as they pass through. They appear through him. That doesn't mean they're his expansions. So Krishna appears in the material world through Om. It's just like he appears like other avatars through Kshiradakshaya Vishnu.
For curiosity, like Om is the name of Krishna, so they kept Om on top of Krishna, that some temple you mentioned. If they put Krishna's name on top of Krishna,
what? We used to have, this altar came with a big Om on it, we took it off.
if they would have put Krishna's name,
yeah.
If they would have put Krishna's name instead of Om, what, how we would have taken that as? I mean, above Krishna is instead of Om.
Better. Better. We prefer chanting Krishna than to chant Om.
Yeah, but the understanding what they have is the like form came from the name. So
form came from the name.
Will it be like contradictory to your philosophy?
Wait, does the form come from the name?
I mean, like if I'm just asking, if they would have put like that, like we say the non-difference, will that make sense?
But form comes from the name. You're describing a causation in time. That first there was the name without the form, and then the form appeared after that. We don't agree with that.
Okay.
The form is eternal. The name is eternal.
Okay.
Anything else?
Okay, one more question.
Yeah.
You are telling about bhakti reveals bhakti, but we also read some sections like Krita Punya Punja, or like, you know, a lot of pious activities they've done, that's why they've become cowherd boys or things like, you know. So what are the relation between pious activity and receiving bhakti?
Well, it's okay, it's interesting, but when, who said that? Brahma? But that may, you could object that that's not technically correct, that Brahma's talking like that, but they didn't actually become Krishna's boyfriends by heaping up their pious credits. He's Brahma, he became Brahma by pious credits. So he thinks getting a high position means accumulating, you know, cashing in your pious credits. This is the way he's thinking. It's probably not correct. But there is a role of agyata sukriti in beginning the process of devotional service. Living entities don't have any qualification. Conditioned souls don't have any qualification for devotional service. The mercy of the Vaishnavas Bhakti herself is independent, but she usually acts through the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas are the agents of Bhakti. When Bhakti wants to descend on somebody, the Vaishnavas are inspired to give attention to someone and show that person their mercy. What's the mechanism by which the Vaishnavas, by which Bhakti inspires the Vaishnavas to bless the person whom she wants blessed? So this Agata Sukriti can be one of the mechanisms. A person does something good, and that catches the attention of the Vaishnavas. So there's a role of it, but it's sort of a superficial role. It's not the real cause of, it's not at all the real cause of Bhakti. There's something behind it, because if someone's got a bad heart, a bad attitude, then he can't accept Bhakti. He's not a fit receptacle for Bhakti. He'll just spit it out. A person has to have a decent heart, has to be honest and humble and submissive to real authority to be able to receive the blessings of Bhakti. And let's not say that doing good makes you fit, but if you're fit, if you're at all a fit candidate for devotion, you should be doing something good. You know, what kind of fit candidate for devotion are you if you only do all the wrong things? If you don't do any sukriti. So sukriti is like a symptom of someone that maybe is a fit candidate. Just like you're trying to distribute books. And you're supposed to be ready to give a book to anybody. But you also have your eye out for the person who's a likely person to take that book. Oh, you know, he's 18 years old, he's got long hair, and he doesn't have a girl, you know, dragging him around. Maybe he'll take the book. You see a symptom of someone who just your intelligence tells you that this symptom, the way this person looks, means to you that he might likely take the book. So the Bhakti's agents, the Vaishnavas, when they see someone doing sukriti, they think, well, maybe this is a likely candidate. They take it as a symptom of someone's fitness to receive Bhakti.
I remember we studied in the first year this story of Narada Muni, and it was exactly what was said in this connection, that there are two kinds of kripa, nirapeksha kripa and apekshita kripa.
Apekshita
kripa, yeah. So, and then Vishnu Chakravarti, in his commentary, he explained that the sages, when they came to the house of Narada Muni and they just saw him, immediately, because their heart was filled with bhakti, they bestowed upon him nirapekshita kripa, because he didn't deserve anything from this kripa. They just bestowed this kripa. And then when he started manifesting some good quality, like when they saw that he is actually fit for this, like he was well behaving, he was sober, he wasn't interested in any material activity, he was serving them. So they bestowed upon him further kripa.
That doesn't mean that he didn't have any good qualities before they came, right? Did they create good qualities?
He says that if there will be any cause for this kripa, because of his quality or because of anything.
Okay, he had good qualities, but those good qualities were not, didn't make his good fortune.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a nirapekshita kripa, it would be a apekshita kripa.
But the nirapekshita kripa came first.
Yeah. They just give it to everyone, and then when they see that somebody is ready to receive further, that they give more and more and more.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. Okay, we don't have time to start the next paragraph. Do you have any other questions?
Brihat about Om, that Om Icha Tatha something. But there also, there is no dot on it. And it's OM, not AUM.
O-U-M, where?
No, A-M. O-M, not A-U-M.
Where are you looking?
In Harinamrita Vyakaran.
In?
Harinamrita.
Okay. I'm sorry, and how is it broken up?
It's O-M.
O-M?
O-M.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is O-M. I mean, that's the actual syllable. Some Upanishad may say Aum, but it's actually Om. And then what else?
But there is no dot, and also
there's no dot. Yeah, so it's really it's Ma. It's not Anuswar.
There is no sutra also given. Like if there is Vishnujan comes in front of it, then that Ma becomes Vishnu Chakra or not? It's not given here.
It doesn't become Vishnu Chakra, but... Vishnu Chakra is not an answer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and it doesn't become an answer before it comes?
No, it's not given here.
But it's an M, like every other M. An M becomes before Vishnu. I don't think that it's an exception to the rule. It becomes anuswar before a consonant, like every other M. So there's nothing mystical about the M on Om. It's an O. It's an M. Yes. Very long time, yeah.
Then if it goes, the character of Vishnu Chakra actually comes in that, in the sense it vibrates on the Shiro-Nashi-Gova, in the head and the nose. It has to come, like Krishna, we stop on there, but if it is goes a long time, the characteristics of the pronunciation comes there. So.
Well, the thing is, the difference between, if I have it right, between the Ma-Kara and the Anuswara, is not that the makara has no vibration in the nasal passage, but that it's vibrated also in the mouth by closing the lips. Anuswara is a pure anunasika, a pure nasal, not vibrated in the mouth. Mm. But ma also involves that nasal vibration, you know, above the mouth, you know, in the nasal passage. All the nasals do. Yeah, ma belongs to Pravarga, because it involves an obstruction in the mouth. The lips are closed.
But if you chant Om, it falls to come in the head and the nasika.
Yeah, but you do close your mouth also. Om, you don't? Did the yogis who teach you how to chant Om, did they tell you not to close your mouth? You do close the lips. So it's up there, you know, in the brain, it's vibrating in the brain, fine, and behind the nose. But it's also in the mouth that makes it a sparsha, that there's an obstruction in the mouth also. Nasal sounds, the nasal sparshas, the last five in each row, the fifth one in each row, are pronounced both in the mouth and the nasal passage, both. Well, okay, well that's great. Om's also in the head, but...
Is it the pronunciation of Om has to be like the matras are there in the technical? Like it can be Om or Om...
I don't think it... At least Panini doesn't say anything about... No, Jiva Goswami doesn't say anything about it having to be extra number of syllables. If it was, it would be marked at least as Pluta, you know, as triple... What to speak of... 50 times longer. So there's no, the grammar doesn't indicate that it has to be extra long. I think that's just a use of Om, you know, in meditation to stretch it out. But I think the normal pronunciation is just a long, you know, a single long vowel. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not an expert on Om.
Like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, we keep
it short.
Yeah,
we don't say Om Namo Bhagavate.
But at the same time, I have seen some leaders, they chant like, Om Ajnana Timiran, like they chant for a long time also. So it's like, okay. I don't know what
I
chanted.
I think that's just embellishment.
Okay.
It's not the way it has to be pronounced. Okay. We'll stop now. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.